Hello and welcome. This is an upload of an impromptu chat that I had with Gregory Becker. Greg, he's produced a number of MGTOW and male-orientated content over the last year or so. And I always found him to have quite a profound grasp on the male experience and quite a deep understanding of the male psyche. I count this as one of the most important videos I've ever posted on this channel. And I hope you enjoy it, because I found his insights riveting.
I was curious about sort of your backstory. Just coming into sort of the online sphere. I mean, how long were you sort of looking at videos before you started making them yourself?
Let's see. Probably about, I suppose about a good year and a half, 2 years. And I was laughing at most of them.
Okay.
I really was. I was just laughing. I mean, my mindset was in the direction of, you know, come on, guys, man up. It really was. It was like, what the hell are you guys complaining about? You know, we've seen this before. You know, we've all been down this road. What's the big deal?
Right.
But I'll tell you, I watched this Sandman video, and I know a lot of people refer back to him, but I watched this Sandman video. And as funny as this sounds, he was talking about how this guy was risking his life after an ice storm, you know, just shoveling the snow, right?
Yeah.
And he had all this really funny footage where this woman was peeking at the blinds at the guy, and he captured this footage.
Yeah, I've seen it.
And I was laughing hysterically at this video, and and I looked at it and I was just like, you know, what is this character here? What is his problem? You know, and then at the end of the video, of course, he's the only person with a generator and all his Christmas lights are working and everyone else is, you know, the whole is out, you know, with electricity. And, but I laughed about it. I thought it was hilarious. And so that's why I started watching a lot of the content. I was just like, this is hilarious. Let me just stay quiet as I can.
Yeah. Okay.
And so I would watch these videos, and that's how it would, you know. But I couldn't get that one out of my head for some reason.
Yeah.
It just kept coming to me.
That was a very well made video. I've got to say, it really was. I haven't seen much
of the timing of that. Just...
Yeah. I haven't seen much of his videos, Sandman, but I think I might watch about two or three. Max, but that was one of the ones I saw, and it was very well made.
Yeah, it was. It was just funny the way he put it together, and but the thing that entered my mind from that video was how he was raising some questions, right? Even though it was kind of like, okay, we all go out. And what I was thinking to myself was, maybe I should comment and say, you know, she didn't even have like some hot chocolate ready for this guy. I mean, it's amazing,
yeah.
You know.
Yeah, yeah.
But I just kept silent, and but I couldn't get it out of my head. And I think I watched it again. It makes one every day, so I just kind of subscribed to him and started watching some of his.
Right.
But. And then there was a lot. The thing is, this is interesting. I can remember this now.
Yeah.
That particular video, there was another video linked into it. And it was by a guy, I can't even think of his name right now, but he made a video where he was like, he looked really angry. Is Mr. Zion. And it was about these three girls who stripped this kid naked in public and put the video on YouTube where it stayed for like 24 hours.
Yeah.
And when I, that was LinkedIn. It was like part of the LinkedIn to his watch these videos also. And so I watched that and started watching a lot of his videos because he was just against feminism.
Right.
And so I saw that video. That one was the one that pissed me off like unbelievably because, you know, I had same kind of background. My mother was doing the same to me.
Yeah.
And so that's what I was. And then I started that linked into others and others where guys were having these really horrible experiences, you know, with women. And I thought Sandman's were, kind of lame in comparison. I mean, he was pointing out some really interesting stuff, but he had this MGTOW tag on there, and that's when I started looking at the MGTOW and,
Right.
anti-feminist, stuff.
Yeah.
But it was
No, it's
through
fine.
that little, I guess, that I
Yeah.
guess I started waking up or whatever.
Yeah.
How about you?
Yeah, well, it's I actually started, I think I started making videos around the same time as Sandman. For me it was probably just a few months before I started making content. I'd stumbled across Barbarossa's videos and then of course Stardust's, which I thought both were exceptional. Yeah, I had quite the same reaction as well. At first I experienced a lot of anger when I first started listening to Barbarossa and what he was saying in his videos. So from there, it was just a, I guess, a natural progression. If these guys are doing it, why can't I? I think we all come to that
Yeah.
conclusion at some point. Well, all it takes is a microphone and a computer. I can do that.
Yeah, I was just thinking to myself, I think, let me just make this one video, the red pill, and leave it at that. And then people started like commenting and saying, make more, and I was just like, well, I don't know what to talk about at this point, but let me just, maybe I will make another one. Maybe I got a lot to say here. And I had 25 composition books filled with notes from therapy
Oh, wow.
over a 3.5 year period, and they were filled. And I took a lot of information that I wrote down, just notes, thoughts, that sort of thing. No one had ever taken a look at them, but I would say probably 70% of my videos came out of those books.
Wow. Wow. Jeez, I've
So.
never met someone that methodical with it.
Yeah.
In my years in the
Yeah,
field, never.
I'd start journaling and that was it. I
Wow.
just I once I start journaling, I still do it today. I still journal. I write quite a bit, so but
Sure.
it's probably up to about 30 journals now.
Wow.
Maybe more.
Got it. Yeah.
I know I got a lot.
Think the only organization that comes close to that, I saw a documentary Going Clear about Scientology. Have you seen that one?
No,
You should see it on YouTube. It's an expose on Scientology, very well done. But of course they've got that that testing ritual that they have to cleanse them of those alien bodies or whatever it is. But they take copious amounts of notes. I mean, they have entire rooms full of books on these people. So people like John Travolta and things like that, I mean, they can't speak out against the religion due to fear of all the copious amounts of information they have on these people. But
Oh, you're kidding me.
no.
Wow.
I mean, that's why John Travolta, you saw him at that high court hearing or whatever it's called over in Supreme Court hearing over in America. Because what else can you do? They've got all this dirt on them.
Oh, wow. That
Yeah.
sounds like like crossing bones or something.
Yeah.
like a the college organizations or whatever, where
Yeah.
they join those fraternities or whatever, and it's like once you're in, that's it. And wow, man, I didn't know that.
Yeah.
They got a whole library of every all the goods on you. Oh wow,
That would be terrible. That would
no
be
wonder
awful.
it's like I've heard that it's like militarized
Yeah.
in at some of those places. Oh, wow.
I'll
I
send
don't
you a
know,
link actually,
man.
because there is one on YouTube. I actually I like the video, so I'll send you the link on. It's very well made. It's very well
Oh
done.
wow.
Yeah.
Yeah, I do think of YouTube as like funny videos and stuff,
Yeah.
what I mean? Make you get some paranormal stuff in there and that sort of thing. I didn't know guys were actually putting out informational content at the level that they do. I mean, people like Stardust, I
Yeah.
mean, that guy has a library at this point of over 300 and some videos, maybe. Maybe
Wow.
the same is true for Barbarossa. These two guys, I mean, I look at their content, I'm just like, where did all that information come from?
Yeah.
And of course, Stardust, he is a very unique person. Just amazing. And I think I'm at over 100 videos now, but
Really?
I thought to myself, yeah, if I could have probably done it over, I would definitely go for, the quality over the quantity. I would have somehow condensed it a little better than I did. I mean, you got like 30, 40 videos, maybe 40 videos now.
Not even that, not even close. I think I've around 30.
Yeah, but I mean, everyone I've ever talked to, they're just, those are the ones that just, I mean, when you watch a they've said before, it's like Christmas when a video comes out, it's like Christmas. All the guys are just like, running to watch this video. It's just awesome.
Well,
And
it's
the
like a
last video they made, I was amazed. That people didn't see what you were talking about in the first video.
I
I was
know.
like, well, what did they miss?
Yeah, I know.
What did they miss? Go
It's
back
very
and watch it again
it
if you comment.
was very interesting. It was a very interesting reaction. I mean, I'm sure, because like from what you've said to me that you've facilitated groups, or you're currently helping facilitate groups at present, is that correct, with men? Yeah, it's you do hit that in a group. You'll have a few guys that agree with you. You'll have others that keep silent, and you'll have one or two that will challenge you. And regardless of what you're saying, I mean, it's that dynamic, and it was very interesting to see. Very interesting to actually see men's reactions to what I was saying. Because yeah, you're right. It couldn't be any more clear.
Well, since we're on that subject, that's what they were. I mean, like it looked exactly like that. When information it somehow doesn't connect, the pathways don't like connect. I mean, you can convince people, other people get it right away, but trying to, like, when you reveal something about consent the way that you did in that video, if a person has been, victimized by it, they're not ready to see it right away. They resist. They resist. No, I was not hurt by this. This did not happen. And then they have that moment where they just kind of freak out and realize it. We all have. I've
And
definitely had that moment quite a few times.
it's necessary for us to go through it, because we've all been through it. It forces you to face your beliefs, and you push through that wall, and then you come to a place of acceptance. And it's hard to face that, but I mean, you've talked about this at length in your videos. I mean, it's essentially that grieving process where you come to just a clearer understanding of where you are and the world around you, and it's painful. It's fucking painful. And I understand where these guys are at, and yeah, I don't know. I just look at some of the messages that are being put out now, and I know that these men are going to change their opinion in time, but that content is still going to be up there. So there is a responsibility there, saying that women are evil and all the rest of it. Well, you're going to change it. You're going to progress. Someone like Barbarossa, I mean, look at how he started out. He was so angry, and anger is good. It drives a man, but he's a different person now. And
Yeah,
these content makers, they're going to be the same. They're going to go through the same process. So there's a responsibility there.
he has. I remember watching some of his earlier content, and he has definitely like grown into a type of acceptance where he can like navigate his world like a lot better, in terms of his thought process. And of course, he's highly intelligent. He fucked me up with a couple of his videos, that's for sure. I can even tell you which one. He did this video called On the What If, and after watching that video, oh man, it's like when you're not expect you see yourself in the mirror and there's something there that you never expected to see. And it had to do with that, how do you put it? He said, the thing we fear the most is horrific possibilities, right? And he was, of course, framing it with that movie that I had seen called The Martyrs. And I remember thinking to myself, you know what? I come with some horrific possibilities. And the first time I saw that in my own imagination, I was like, okay, this is relative, because everyone else comes with their horrific possibilities too. And when you put them all together, that makes for time. Like calm down. That's scary to me. And because at that time when I watched that, I had just started doing some men's groups, and I was like realizing the potential of some of the members there.
How long have you been doing that? How long have you been involved with that?
Oh, before I started making videos, actually.
Oh, wow.
Probably about 3 years now.
Oh, wow. Fantastic.
3 years, yeah.
So, is that what's a local community group, or is it fathers that have sort of gone through the sort of the whole family court divorce thing?
it started online.
All right.
I started to just talk to a couple of other guys. Like, one was at work. He was going through divorce at the same time I was. We just started talking just to kind of try to support one another. And he knew a couple other people, and we would meet, and I said, man, we ought to start like a regular kind of meeting, I mean, we really don't kind of have much, but that didn't kick off. And I couldn't get the guys to want to show up. They just wanted to, wallow and hide and, that sort of thing, and just kind of slip into this really quiet world. And I couldn't get it to kick off. And then I found a divorce group. It was co-ed, and that was online. And I joined that, and I started talking to people there. I was very interested in the men. All the women were going through similar stuff, but I really wanted to just hang out with the dudes. And so I started talking to some of them and say, hey, why don't we start our own, kind of, group where we can talk? Because these guys were not talking in the group. They were just they were treating it like a dating
Oh, God.
thing. They didn't talk about it, So when, like you said, when the women are around, the men will just,
Oh, yeah.
So I wanted to sequester them away from the women. I wanted to corner these guys. And it was like, it was difficult to do, but I got a handful of them to agree to it, and they did. And when they did let it out, when they did start, kind of opening up, once they kind of like let out the anger kind of a thing, they just kind of moved on. They went right back to dating and securing another mate. And I was like, this is not gonna work. Something is not happening here. They've acknowledged what has happened to some degree or another, but they have not internalized what has really happened here. And I can't actually articulate it. And that's when I started looking at, MGTOW content after that. And then I started, like, I guess saying, how can I get these guys to like open up and like stay realized, It was hard, but people flew, flowed in and flowed out and flowed in and flowed out. I actually had a therapist contact me and said that she wanted to take over my group because it looked like conducting therapy, okay, without a license. And I said, oh, this is group therapy without a therapist. I said, and what's happening here, that these relationships can form naturally and there's no boundary violations going on, okay? And if a woman takes it over, I said, these guys are not going to talk anymore. And she goes, well, worry about the aggression that could come from this, right? And she cared about women. You know where I'm going with this, right? I mean, she wanted to direct that conversation. I said, And I just told her very plainly, I said, "Here, let me try to put this in words you can understand." I said, all that aggression that they may experience can easily be replaced once they have the wisdom to form a really good argument against it. And I said, and I'm here to give them that argument, and I intend to." And that became literally one of the high focal points of the group, was turning all that aggression into wisdom. You know what I mean? That can really back up a pretty strong argument, right? And so MGTOW's a pretty good argument out there now, isn't it? So when I conduct the groups, I don't mix MGTOW content in there, but I do provoke the awakening, and I do get them to, confront the reality of what has happened, of course, and turn it into a process, and then facilitate leading it to a predestined outcome where they are, aware. Their awareness has been raised. Now, I don't force them to take any, to them, they would easily be able to spot, okay, you're selling something. I'm not selling anything. This stuff sells itself. Okay, awareness just sells itself. So now I just kind of, it's kind of easy how it goes. I can tell where people are at. You learn to read people, and I just let it just flow naturally. I think I talked to you a little bit about that, where I see those themes keep popping up, the why questions. I can help
Yo,
with that,
definitely.
that's for sure.
Yeah, that actually stuck with me. I was thinking quite long and hard on that one. It's certainly a recurrent thing.
And then the revenge fantasy, because that does come up. I provoke the hell out of that. It's like a wild animal that I'll poke with a stick. I will get that thing angry because I can take that revenge fantasy to the outcome that it'll ultimately bring, and that's when they say, this is gonna lead to either me being in jail, or me being angry for the rest of my life, or me just being miserable or whatever. How do I, deal with this revenge fantasy? And then I show them there's something beyond that. There's something like really beyond that, and it has to do with your own, how you define peace, joy, and contentment for your life. Believe me, that does not lead there. Fulfilling that desire or whatever. And then there's this really mysterious one, and it can't be nailed down for anyone, and that's that need for rescue. They were endangered early on in their childhood. They were endangered because they take these thoughts way back to their mothers, their sisters, their family members, their friends, school, all that. They take it back. They have all these memories. And what they realize is that they had these endangerment issues where someone wasn't looking out for them, but they had to look out for someone else. Someone else was being cared for more than them, and they're wondering, where's my good Samaritan? And it's different for every guy. And so it's a really, I swear, it's held in kind of mystery for me, but these guys will try to manipulate you into rescuing them. It is really a deep need. And I can't allow that. If I allow that, that's all I'm going to be doing. I won't have a life. That's all I'll be doing. The idea is to rescue yourself. I keep turning it in that direction. These guys will literally try to corner me alone. And I'm just like, the idea is to rescue yourself. And that is something that guys don't want to hear. And for good reason. Because basically they're saying, I'm all I have. And I have to confront them with that. They have to see that in order to build relationships that are meaningful to them based on what they value rather than what someone else values. And that's what it ultimately leads to. That rescue thing is so sad, though. I swear it's pitiful to me. I feel such empathy for it, but I can do literally do nothing. I mean, they're to the point where they'll stand on train tracks. If you don't rescue me, I'll get run over by the train, and I'll say, I can warn you that that train will run you over, but I can't rescue you from it. You have to get the fuck off those tracks. Okay? Don't do it. Don't do it.
Have you?
It's like an intervention of some kind, you
Oh,
know?
very much
It's
so,
like
yeah.
an inter to get them to rise to their own defense, you know? It's sad though. The lengths that they're willing to go to get that you know, that rest.
Oh, yeah. I mean, you must have had quite a few breakthroughs with, or a few instances of breakthroughs with a few different men in the group. Any
Oh
sort of
yeah.
experiences, yeah?
Yeah. Yeah, lots of them. Where they realize it right there in the moment. And you know, because it's just men, I've told them, you know, you have the right to be vulnerable without shame or fear of attack. No matter what happens in here stays in here. You know, I have more than a couple, you know, not say a word, just you can tell they're weeping. And they come to that place where it's like, I can't believe it. You know, it Stardust, he just talked about it, you know, the noble lie. You know, we were lied to. It hurt so bad that we were, you know, lied to for all these years, our whole life, even our own mother, you know, lied to us. It's like, oh God, that's the worst. Yeah, I've had those moments where the guys would, you know, they come to a realization that they were nothing more than just, you know, these slaves, basically. You know, these finance, I don't like to call them slaves. I don't like that word. I like to think of them. I tell them, you know, it's about becoming a facilitator. You know, for everyone except yourself. You know, a financial facilitator. You know, a task facilitator. You know, just everything based upon you being the facilitator, because ultimately, if it succeeds, someone else is going to take the credit, and if it fails, you're going to take the blame. That's all you're there to do, and that resonates pretty deep with some guys, and that's when they say, "Yeah, you're right. That's all I'm doing. I can't believe this." And then, you know, of course, you get into the family courts, and you get into the details you find there, and that's a nightmare all unto itself. Yeah, but
With
I
these
think the
guys,
worst I
yeah.
heard, if you want to hear this,
Yeah.
was a guy who was married to I mean, I've heard some horror stories, but guy was married to a therapist, believe it or not. And you know, there she is, a therapist, driving him to the brink of suicide. And I'm thinking to myself, how in the world can a therapist ethically do that to another human being? That's unreal.
What was she doing? Just it was manipulation, I mean, or was it legal?
It was all the legal system. She was using the entire legal system against her. She had an attorney, and the attorney was telling her to provoke an attack by him. He said the attorney told her that she could do whatever she wanted to him, and if he hits her back, that's all they'll see in the case, is that he hit her. So she would walk up, knock a pair of headphones off of his head, kick him, you know, in the middle of the night, throw water on him, all this stuff, because he had no other place to go. And of course, she alienated the child from him, told the child all kinds of stuff. Tried to do the whole, you know, molestation thing. I mean, it's classic. I mean, this is like worst case scenario. And I was just like, I said, if you haven't started, you know, you're gonna have to literally document everything. And there is an app for domestic violence. Anyone can download it, and all you have to do is press a button on your phone, and it records everything going on. I said, you need to have that on your phone at all times. Don't be without your phone. I know it's hypervigilance, but you really need to take some measures to protect yourself from this woman. But he never hit her. He never did anything. He's been to jail twice now. innocent, didn't do a thing, and it's terrible, terrible. I gotta just silence this other phone real quick.
Yeah, all good.
It's my work phone, and I'm telling them to piss off. I'm done. My weekend's here, and I'm done.
Yeah, that's right.
All right. But I'm sure you've heard, you know, the similar stuff.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not a therapist. I'm just a guy who started some groups, you know. I have no therapy background at all, except having been in therapy. But, you know, I just want to do what I can to help some guys out there.
Yeah. I mean, have you ever thought about, because you have all the qualities and you have the experience as well. I mean, you must have thought at some point of actually training to be a psychotherapist or going into the therapy field.
When I was younger, yes, because of how I grew up and everything. I grew up in an extremely abusive household, and I thought about that from a very early age. But you know, I actually thought, actually early on, probably like at around 10,
oh,
I was
wow.
thinking this. This is early. There was a time when I thought to myself, you know what, I've got some major issues, and I know I do. Would I be going into that just to cure myself, or would I be really trying to help people? And how can I separate the two? How do I, you know, do that? I was thinking that way at 10, very early on in life. And so, you know, just through a course of events between my parents who were, you know, alcoholics and everything, it just, you know, that life didn't pan out for me. I grew up in Brooklyn, Baltimore. It's a really rough area.
Right.
And that environment was just not conducive to, you know, a lot of the guys, you know, they, you know, once you're out of school, you get a job and you just find a place to live and you live there, you find the girl there, and that's it. You don't move too far. And a lot of the same people are just still living in that place and will never leave. But, you know.
But yeah. I just want to talk about your content there, because you've made your videos in itself. I mean, you've made quite a few different series, like I know your suicide series and a few different ones. I mean, you haven't had many views on some of those videos. Some of the other ones, you've had quite a few views, but it seems like the most important ones, the ones that are really delving really deeply into the male psyche and the issues at hand, you haven't had many views in regards to that. Well, what do you think that is? Just sort of, I mean, I've got an opinion on it, and it's nothing to do with your presentation or the content, quality of the content. It's,
I think, in some regards, I think it's just an unwillingness to confront those issues. You know, that's the, you know, what I initially, you know, think. It goes a little deeper than that. I think when it comes to suicide, I realize that the only way that this is going to probably anchor in someone's consciousness is to show them that I have dealt with this situation in a very real way. I know exactly why I have these suicidal thoughts. I mean, I've had them for 40 years now, you know, since I was 7.
Right.
And I know how my thoughts changed from, you know, wanting to, like, kill my parents, you know, because they were so abusive. I grew up in a highly abusive environment. I mean, this was legitimate, you know, abuse. It was so bad. I mean, I had a father, you know, he was a drunk, and he was my stepfather. He wasn't my real father, but and my mother, she was a drunk too. But they were both. My mother was really, she was like the worst. She had the worst effect on me. But I remember thinking to myself, you know, I want to kill him. But I grew up in this Catholic neighborhood, right? We were all Catholics, right? Everyone's supposed to be holy. We pray at dinner, and then, he'd dare anyone at the dinner table to talk, and if you did, you'd get the shit beat out of you. And he'd, he'd take off his belt, and we'd pray, and then dare anyone to talk. And I would sit closest to him, because he couldn't wind up the way he could on anyone else at the table. And so I adopted this belief early on that safety was in the heart of danger, the safest place, be as close to the danger as possible, and you're typically a little more safer because you can see it coming, you can lessen the blows, all that stuff. So I realized in that series, the reason that my mind shifted from wanting to kill them was because I had this thought in my head, well, that would be sin. I mean, I know as ridiculous as that sounds, but that's why I put in that religious part of that series where I was talking about the rates of suicide between religions. The idea was that, okay, maybe there's something wrong with me, and if I go away, then maybe they'll be happy. Maybe I'm the problem. That's when I internalized it. I got it all to turn inward. And it happened because of an event that happened in conjunction with that. But from 7 years old, I was seriously contemplating it like on a daily basis. But I knew I have suicidal thoughts. And if you're having suicidal thoughts, then there's a real why behind it. And I discovered mine, and I can help you discover yours if you're willing, but the stigma with that, it's very real. I know people who have, tried to seek help, and they've literally had everything taken away. And they barely recovered just from that. They make the experience so bad that, you go into a facility, a psychiatric facility, they strip you naked, take all your clothes and put you in a gown, and then don't let you have contact with anyone, and all you're doing is talking to some psychiatrist who wants to just, pump you full of meds or whatever. These experiences, I mean, it'll make you want to kill yourself. So I think that they somehow, there's still this stigma that keeps people from, wanting to. I mean, if we can change the language, and change the way we think about it, it'll be easier to talk about, and people won't fear, the stigma will somehow go away. But it's very real, that stigma. It's very powerful. So I think that may be why I didn't get the response. I know a lot of guys have private messaged me. Now, I may not have had a lot of views, but I did get a lot of private messages from that series where people were saying, please keep talking, please keep talking. I don't know where you're leading with this, but please keep talking. So.
Now those, I mean, the insights, even in just what you've relayed to me now, these insights that once men had them, they've charted their course. But it's about getting men to that point, and it's very confrontational. I can understand why men can just shut that out immediately. They don't want to look at it. It really is peering down the rabbit hole. It's holding up a mirror to yourself, and it's seeing the ugliest part of yourself and your experience as well. It's very sobering.
It's that whole, once you see it, you can't unsee it. It's scary to a lot of people. It's very scary, and that, that I know a lot of guys who they enjoy the experience of waking other guys up to MGTOW. Almost they kind of celebrate it. I don't celebrate that. I don't feel like a celebratory victory dance of any kind. What I sense is like the gravity associated with it. Because it is these guys and they're within them, they're sinking down. They're sinking like in, they could easily sink into a depression or a fit of rage. Those things are, I mean, it's just common. But I don't celebrate like waking people up. It's just something that I make sure that I let them know I'm not celebrating this. I don't sit around laughing at the, you know, you waking up the way that you're waking up. This is, I am very concerned for you, and it's genuine concern. And I don't hide that. I make it very well known. This is bothering me that you're going through this, you know. So I think that keeps them connected, to just, hey, people do care. You know, they do care that you're going through this, you know. I know a lot of guys are just like, you know, wake them up and let the chips fall where they may. But I can't take that approach. It just doesn't fit me.
Right. Yeah, no, I agree with that. It's people can be very flippant with it. I said in my last video, I've said in a few videos that the MGTOW itself is, it's not a destination, it's just part of the journey. A lot of men try to rely on the actual, I don't know, the concept of MGTOW and say that this is now my identity, but it's no, it's just the way that these guys are applying it or not applying it. It's incredibly isolating, and they're limiting their opportunities. They're not. It's they're just. A lot of these guys say that all they do is go to work and go home, and that's it. And these guys are messaging me. It's funny, you know. I've had messages from guys a year ago and 6 months ago now, and their situation is just getting worse. And it's God, the only one that can help them is themselves. I keep putting it back on them, but I keep giving them the same message, but they won't take it on board. They refuse to. It's only a matter of time before these guys start acting out or just self-harming, or it's sad to see. There's only so much I can do.
That's kind of why I did that, the Elliot Rodgers video. You know, I see what he was, you know, I watched his videos, you know, which were just like, okay, man, you've crossed over into the realm of, okay, as scary as it is to say this out loud, because I don't think I ever have, there's that potential there. That potential exists,
Oh, absolutely.
where some guys could, I mean, and it's the quiet ones. There's a lot of guys out there just listening. They're not commenting. They're not making videos. They're not interacting. They're watching this, and, you know, they're being very quiet. They're very silent. And I think to myself, you know, how do you reach that guy who you know is just listening? He's not commenting. He's not liking videos. He's not somehow making a connection. How do you reach that guy? Because that's why I say, you know, that's why I made, you know, content in regards to, you know, the revenge fantasy, trying to explain where the motivation of that comes from, because that's what's driving it. I mean, Elliot Rodgers had a deep revenge fantasy, and this revenge fantasy is common with a lot of guys. I've talked with a lot of guys on the phone, you know, who need me to talk to them. And they've asked me, they go, do you like picture, do you have like, you know, pictures in headwear, you know, you see yourself like, you know, women or anything like that? And I say, it's part of a fantasy inside my head to get even, you know. But really, ultimately, it will ultimately lead to you getting even by living a good life, and knowing they weren't able to. But here's what's going to happen, because you have to understand this. They're going to say, they're going to justify their abuse to you. They're going to say, you know what? It was a good thing that I abused you, because look at how much better off you are now. It was a good thing. They'll say that. That's a deflection. Okay? They have to own up to their responsibilities of what they did to you. And you can tell them that they're just being condescending and annoying, but just deflect it right back to them, because that's all they're doing is trying to nullify their responsibility with how they treated you or whatever. But just stay on that path of just making your life as good as you can and let that be the revenge. When they're at home at night and they're sleeping on their pillow, tossing and turning, they're hating the fact that you were able to overcome them. So overcome them, with, just living a good life. Because that'll have them tossing and turning, because they can't change. They're probably narcissistic or something like that, and they feel like they have to control you. They'll say things to you just to goad you into an argument, just to tell them that you disagree and the conversation's over. I can't tell you how many times I've done that. And that just drives a narcissist crazy, because they want to argue and they want to win and they want to control, your thought process. And when you shut down a conversation, you hold your hand up and say, "I'm done speaking now." That's enough to drive someone over the edge.
Yeah.
But I don't mind doing that to a narcissist. It doesn't bother me one bit. I don't even have a conflict in my conscience, especially considering what they've probably, given the world. I just can't reflect it back though. But yeah, these guys will call me up and they will ask me, how do I somehow, deal with this fantasy inside my head? It won't go away. I say, you got to take that fantasy to the ultimate darkest outcome you can possibly take it. And when you see yourself at the end of that, once you've finally gotten even, once you've finally gotten that revenge, once you've finally gotten to a place where you've fulfilled everything, what do you see? What do you see there? It's you and everyone is gone and you're in prison or you're dead. Okay, and what did you actually accomplish? The idea is to beat them. Okay, that's why they didn't kill Hitler in World War II. They had to beat him. Okay, defeat him. It wasn't about killing him and martyring him. If you kill them, you martyr them. People will identify with your victims more than they will identify with the pain. Same with Elliot Rodgers, right? He martyred the people that he was angry at the most, right? Don't do that. Don't martyr anyone. Instead, defeat them. Learn how to argue. Learn how to fight this fight, And if you lose, no big deal, man. Find someone you can role play with. Picture those arguments. Picture, develop arguments. Let someone play devil's advocate, and choose someone that you trust in order to do that. That can be very useful, just arguing it out that way. And then when you come with those, when you get into those real life, situations where it's happening, you'll find that you have some weaponry on your behalf, in terms of an argument.
Yeah.
And that could be enough to start you on the road to self-advocacy. And it comes down to that, what you're really saying is no. And that with a lot of resistance when people are used to treating you like shit, they don't like the fact that you're saying no at that point. But the more you say no, the better you get at saying no. You choose your words a little more wisely the next time and the next time. And over a long period of time, it takes a while, it takes work, and it takes development and growth. It'll be met with less and less resistance, believe it or not. I started saying no. I just started saying no, just blatantly, to bosses, to my ex, to whoever. I just started saying no to people.
Yeah.
And I didn't have an argument to back it up, and it was met with a lot of resistance and threats and everything else. And then I started developing some arguments around it, and I started getting better at saying no, And I started not having, in the sense of victories or anything, just personal victories, but they were defeating themselves just by trying to get me to do something that they knew I would say no to. So, I've done that with a lot of people at this point. And you grow and you develop in that direction. And believe it or not, you get to a place where you're advocating for yourself on a level that you never thought you could. And when you do say no, you say it in a way that just says, no, I disagree. No, I will not do that. I prefer not to. That's not the direction my life is going in. I will not choose that for myself. It's that whole consent thing, because that's what they're trying to win is consent. So that video you made, I got it right away. I was like, wow, look at this. This is amazing. I thought we were telepathic at that point.
Well, yeah,
I was like, what a slam dunk.
you're reflecting a oh God, I could just sit here and I hear so much of like my own approach and your approach. The power of saying no, I've spoken of that before. And when you're saying paint a picture for these guys, well, I've been at the bottom end of that. I've seen the results. A group of men just sitting around in the room who have lost everything, who have gone through just horrific amounts of abuse throughout their life and perpetrated horrific amounts of abuse, the worst possible abuses, and coming at the end of that and saying, well, this is the end result. How does it feel? And it is an incredibly stark realization. But still, even then, you've got to tear down walls. You've got to tear down those walls that they still construct. And when you're in a, that kind of macho environment, it takes a lot. It takes a lot of work. But
Yeah.
you do get there.
And you have some failures too,
Oh, yeah.
because there's a lot of guys that and they couldn't connect with it. They couldn't accept it. They couldn't accept what I was trying to say, and of course they would just leave. I still think about those guys. Like, where are they? I still think about them. I can't help but think about them. And how do you get? How do you? Ha it, you know, I'll, it, in my mind, it manifests as a failure. I failed to reach this guy. That was one shot. I think to myself, that was just his one and only shot. He probably took one shot at this and then gave up on it. And so when I look at guys now, I think to myself, that guy right there, this is his one and only shot. And he's relying on, something to resonate with him that really gets him to, because I see this process too. They listen, okay? They acknowledge on some level or another, and they can paraphrase back to you. But it's when they switch it to their own experiences, that's when they begin internalizing it. And that's a big success, okay? Just getting to the place where someone is internalizing something, that is a huge success. And beyond that, I can't ask for anything more, right? I can't hope for anything more than that. Once they switch it to their own experiences, they start talking, they start opening up, they start saying, this is my experience, this is in line with what I was talking about. I can tell they're getting it. That is as far as I'm willing to measure success in reaching guys in terms of giving them validation and that sort of thing. And that's why I really connected with your videos immediately. I was like, he's doing it. He's validating them. He's validating their pain. This is the greatest channel based on validation I have ever seen. And then you build that trust with a viewer, and you validate all those things, and then you can challenge them. At this point, you can challenge them. I
Oh,
think
yeah.
I mean, the whole time, the evolution of your channel, I just think to myself, he can do it. He's doing it. This is working. He can challenge these guys. And so it encouraged me to start challenging some of the perceptions, in MGTOW, with the, meeting women and all that stuff. I say, look, you're not going to coax me into doing it, so don't think you are, because I had a lot of guys contacting me and saying, trying to coax me into hating women and stuff like that. Join my group, and I'm just like, no, you're not going to do this. You're not going to put me in an environment where I have to respond to your dynamics and your leadership. It's not going to happen. I said, I know how to govern myself. I don't need, the group dynamics to rule me or anything.
It's
But
been interesting. I mean, I don't really comment on my channel, and but I read the comments. Some people may think I'm being aloof, but it's not. It's I've been keeping a close watch on the tides of what's been going on online, and so it's built to the point where you're right, where I can challenge people because other people are thinking. You know, factions, groups are developing. You know, there's parameters being set. And people are challenging each other. So now is the time for us to put the questions forward. So I think it's what I'm seeing is just, it's what you see in a group environment as well. It's just a natural progression. Now people are challenging, they're asking questions, and it's confronting to other people who thought we were all just one unit, but it's no. No, now is the time to start asking these deeper questions, start confronting truths and facts and beliefs.
And that's so relative to just who the person is. I mean, they have to figure it out for themselves. It's going to ultimately lead to the fullness of a person's own personal identity, personal manifestation of being. And once they get there, I know the benefit of this. Once they get there, they're not going to be relying on the opinions of others. It's not going to be contingent. They're going to be who they are contingent upon self and self only. And that's complete self-ownership. And when you get there, then you that's like the beginning. That's like the very beginning, of really seeing the world through your own eyes, not through the eyes of others. And when you get there, I know the rewards that come with that. I know the personal rewards that come from that, and how much better you feel. In relation to everything else, you can take things. You don't have to internalize other people's narratives anymore. You don't have to, follow along with certain crowds. You can stand up in the midst of your own groups and say, "Hey, I disagree with you," just flat out. That kind of personal empowerment, it feels good. I mean, it really does feel good. I mean,
Feels great.
power is quite intoxicating, but self-empowerment, I think, is the most intoxicating. It can be, it's not. I don't think it's in the wrong. They're lighting off fireworks outside. That's not gunshots. Don't worry. They let us shoot off anything here. Literally anything, man. They'll give us a rocket launcher if we want it. But I mean, there's a certain way that you can, deal with the circumstances. You know what I mean?
Absolutely.
With all the risks and everything, and you have to be able to assess what. And I mean, we all operate from different, risk levels. I know what I'm willing to do and what I'm not willing to do. Believe it or not, I swear, as weird as it sounds. There's a 19-year-old girl that's interested in me, and she will not let go of it, man. She will not let go of it. She's 19, and she's very beautiful, and she is she's Latino, so she just comes with a lot of passion and fire. And I tell you, man, it's like when you said in your video, I like girls with tattoos on their necks and all the drama that goes with it. I'm like, yeah, I know what you mean. I know what
You
you
know how many
mean.
men actually identify with that? That sent me messages over that. That was like a one takeaway from that video that everybody had, and I just, mate, I got bombarded. I must have had like 60 plus messages from men saying the exact same thing.
Fantastic. We can all identify with that for some reason, and especially, I mean, there's just some women that it's just like you said, it's electric. You can just you feel the charge in the air. So yeah, I know what you mean.
But yeah, I mean, it's God, you're right, we're not monks. I've stayed away from women for a period of time, but that was just to focus on other things, and I just wanted a bit of time to reassess things. So I'm just at the point of I've put a few things in place. Now I'm going to reassess what didn't work, and then potentially go forward from there. So it's just I needed a bit of a time out. That was all. Otherwise, I was just going to be
Because I'm like any other man, I'll start thinking about my dick and everything goes out the window and it's just, you go through the same cycles. Even though you're aware of it, you're cognizant of what you're stepping into, it doesn't help the situation. So you've got to take time out and have a look at things. But yeah, so that's my process. But God, I mean, once I go through that process, of course I'm going to start dating again. But it's going to be on my own terms, the way I navigate it. But still, I'm not aspiring to be a monk, not by any means.
Right. And I think a lot of guys, this is kind of sad to me. A lot of these young guys, they don't get to have their young experience. You know what I mean? Because it's filled with so many risks and they're young. I think when, I mean, I'm 47 now and I'm going to be pushing, into my 50s eventually. I mean, women at that age, they're beyond some of those risks. You're not worried about pregnancy, and you can, maybe they're a little more established in their life. They have their own house. I have my own house. They have, their own lives, where they're not, trying to work the same game. It's still a game, but they're not working. The rules have changed a little bit. They're not trying to secure a baby to get child support. They're not trying to, work the system as much anymore. They're trying to cooperate more at that point. So, I think, when I hear about Paul Elam, he has a partner or whatever. He's at an age where he can deal with the risks a lot easier than some of the younger guys. And so when I saw him encouraging some of the younger guys to get back into the game, I was like, wait a minute, Paul. I said, you got to qualify that with the age restrictions there, man, because the risks are a lot higher when you're younger than they are when you're older.
Yeah,
And
good
uh,
point. Yeah, no, it's a very good point.
I feel kind of bad though that, in my younger days, I mean, I was in a rock band. I used to have hair halfway down my back and it was full. I'm going bald now. But and I can deal with that. But I mean, I got a lot of attention from
Oh, yeah.
women in my 20s. I had a lot of attention. And because I grew up in the 80s and there I was on stage playing, in front of very large crowds and a heavy metal band in the 80s. I mean, I was a hot commodity.
Oh, yeah.
So I had no problem getting attention from women back then. But it was, I look back on that time, as crazy as it was, as oh man, it was a drunken haze. It was just incredible. I look back on it and I think to myself, man, there was a lot of fun during that time, a lot of experiences that I'm so glad that I got to have, and thank goodness I didn't screw it up for myself in some way. But at the same time, I wouldn't trade those experiences for anything.
No, that's
They
fine.
really, but I think a lot of guys, they're missing out on the experiences. There's a segment that's going to be void, like a blank space in their life where once they get past that, they're not going to be able to have those experiences will be gone from them. That bothers me. When I think about that, I don't like the idea of them not being able to, experience their life the way they want without, it's still risky, but back then it was people, it was a different time, but now it's just very serious. There's all this feminism, there's all these, it's very toxic for men now. I mean, they have to get consent just to, grab a woman's breast, It's like laughing this stuff that I see come out of feminism. It's just hysterical. It's like, you guys are so freaking sensitive. It's ridiculous, man. I've never seen a sensitivity level that high. It's hypersensitive beyond, I mean, how do you desensitize that kind of thought process with these women, you're violating me by looking at me. Come on, give me a break, man.
Well, this is kind of a good, that's a good crossover as well, because you've got a lot of guys
that are in their 20s or even the late 20s or 30s, and they've never been in a serious relationship before, and they've never really experienced relationships to any great degree. And a lot of these guys are commenting on videos stating that the risks are too great, which is understandable. That's coming from a logical point of view. But also studying, they're trying to talk about male pain. Like a lot of the disagreements that I got on my last two videos, I know for a fact from some of the guys that have private messaged me that these guys have never had any real experience, life experience, nor relationship experience. And they're telling me that I'm condescending to men who have experienced pain. Yet if I'm doing that, then I'm victim blaming myself. I'm condescending to myself. They have no real life experience that they can actually look at it from that perspective. So that's interesting. What's sort of your take on that?
I think stuff when they were talking about the victim blaming, okay, when it comes to taking responsibility for your life, all the bad, right, that happened, and the act of participation, right, because you really focused on that, and I love, yeah, he nailed it with that. That's the most important component of this. I thought to myself, immediately, as soon as I heard you say that, I was like, that's it. If you are not willing to take responsibility for that, right, then how can you take responsibility for any good that will come as a result of those insights? Because ultimately, you don't just take responsibility for the bad that happened to you. You take responsibility for every good thing that that follows as a result, in terms of insulating yourself for the future, okay? And that is an important thing, because if you get to a place of success in your life, what are you going to do? Shift that to someone else being able to take credit for it? I mean, there's a flip side to that coin. So that's what I took from that, was that, okay, these guys are not, that's where the disconnection is. They're not connecting to the fact that if they do take responsibility for this, what they ultimately get to take responsibility for is they get to take all the credit for every good thing that comes from that, and that's what they weren't seeing, and that denotes a lack of experience. It became very clear to me when I saw the flack you were getting in your comment sections. I was,
Still there?
yeah, there is that. Yeah, there is that. Sorry, I had to just take a swig of my beer. I was teasing you the
Sure, I know. What are you drinking?
night.
What's
I got
your
home and cracked one open. just having a Budweiser.
Budweiser? It tastes like water, mate. Come on, have a real beer.
Well, I'm a lightweight. It doesn't take much for me, but I'm a lightweight.
It's, you know, people got that low carb beer. That's basically what they use for low carb beer down here. So have a
Really?
Budweiser. It's like water.
Can you drink? What do you drink?
Oh no, I don't drink anymore. I had
Oh,
enough.
you don't drink it?
I used to drink all the time, but no, I didn't have a drinking problem. But it just, it's hazed my judgment. I was just all over the place. So I'm not a good drunk.
Yeah, well, I don't know why, but I've always been one of those happy drunks. Not lo one of those loving drunks. I don't really get drunk. I just, drink a couple. But when I was in, in my 20s or whatever, of course, I was just, well, I was wild and crazy. It was my flaming youth. But I just I almost lost my train of thought there for a sec. I had started having flashbacks from the 80s. Maybe that's the real maybe that's the real problem or whatever.
I was going to
But
ask you.
no, I used to be like
Yeah.
like the kind of guy who would drink. I wouldn't be this like, hey, I love you, man. I wasn't like that. I was just happy. It had
Yeah.
that. It didn't have a depressing effect on me. It just kind of happy.
I was going to
But
ask you, like in your experience, because we all know that the dangers have increased for men over the years, but I mean, in your experience, what you, I wouldn't say got away with, but what you experienced when you were younger, as a young man, going out there and being able to make mistakes and have sort of torrid relationships with women and be all over the place, do you think that's something that men, I don't know, can, I know they can engage in it today. I know, God, I've done it. But I don't know what I'm trying to say. The risks are higher. But do you think that you got away with it more? I can't find the right term to express it, but you know what I mean. You could take those chances and not have to live with the consequences.
Because the laws have changed. The society, I mean, in the 80s, that was when the internet was like very highly popularized for business creation. Guys, put on the phone and do keep your voices down, okay? I know you're girls. I know you're girls. I get it. I mean, the laws have changed the social climate. You do a climate survey in the 80s, and everyone was on board. Everyone knew what time of day it was. Here, you can't judge it that well. It's too hard to judge what a person's motivations are for thinking. Like here in Michigan, especially, a lot of women will have sex with multiple guys to get child support from multiple. It's multiple streams of income, basically. They have seen the business opportunity that the courts have given them, and so having four kids with one guy will get you this amount of money, and having four kids with four separate guys will get you four longer amounts of money. And it's the difference between that's $800 a month or $2,400 a month. That's not chump change. Women are seeing their children now, okay, because of the perception thing. We live in the information age. The information age has made information so accessible now that they're comparing notes a lot more. So before it was just these natures were just in the mind of a woman in a click of friends, but now there's communities online where they actively and openly talk about how to get more out of a guy, and some of the guys are the ones helping the women understand how to do it. It amazes me. Why would you do that to us? But yeah, I got away with a lot more because simply because the access to information was lower. Access to information is the key, and because there is such a high access to information now and how the system works, you can Google how to work the system. You can Google anything you want now. That is what has changed the climate, you know what I mean? And that's why I've promoted the idea of a new deal is going to have to be struck. That's going to have to speak mutual appreciation, and rather than this economy that we're currently working from. We can't just do what's just right for us. We have to consider, how that, trickles down to other relationships. And we have to start looking for mutual benefits, mutual appreciation with those benefits, and work from that rather than this constant, how do I screw this person over? It's very predatory, It's very predatory right now. I think the nature of relationships now, they've become so predatory.
It's a good way of putting it.
And back then, it wasn't, we weren't preying on each other. We were playing a game, and we were, it was like a dance more than anything else. It was, it was like mating rituals, you know what I mean? It was more like in those lines. But now, it's like, Black Widow. Everything's Black Widow.
What do you put that down to? Just just in your perspective, what do you put that down to? Is it, I mean, there's a combination of economic scarcity, there's a recession going on, there's natural biological imperatives, there's media, there's propaganda, there's everything in between. But if you could, sort of condense it into sort of I don't know, a general just cause and effect, what would you put it down to?
Shame.
Yeah.
We are relying solely upon shame as money. It's shame is like money. It's a currency, and we use it to barter everything now. It has become so relied on, and it was before it was based upon more on honor, I guess. I wouldn't even call it honor, though. It was just more mutual appreciation. But it has moved into this realm of this currency of shame, where everything is based upon shame. Every personal economy, whether it be your relationships, whether it be business tactics, whether it be your relationship to your employer. You're even in church. I mean, church is so reliant upon shame. Even the courts themselves are giving people a choice between incarceration or holding a sign on a corner stating what your crime is. They're using shame as a way to modify. Everyone's become so aware of how they can use shame to modify people's behavior. It works. Okay, even this is why I think I asked that question on Barbarossa's channel when I was interviewing you. It was these famous psychological experiments. I mean, if you think about learned helplessness, right? The findings from that experiment alone. I mean, what do we see with police officers? We see these tasers on their side as a second sidearm, and they're modify your behavior with an electric shock, the same way they modified the behavior of those dogs in that experiment. And isn't it interesting? Isn't it interesting that, these animals are now afforded a higher ethical standard than what they would be willing to afford to humans now?
Yes, yeah, very much so.
You see what I mean? And that's pretty kind. And now we let that play out on all psychological experiments, and we begin to see. Take Richter's rats. That was the premise of my first video. Warfare. Keep them motivated. Keep them swimming. Keep them swimming at all costs, right? You become idle in any way, and they can motivate you because recoiling from the shame by fear of death, fear of incarceration, will motivate you to, become more active in your life. And so there, everything, whether it be, in the justice system, whether it be with feminism or just society in general, is relying upon shame as a chief motivation. And all it does, and this is what I see all the time, is paralyze people. It causes paralysis, especially associated with fear. It causes paralysis. It actually does, in some cases, provoke the awakening. But have we ever considered other motivations other than that? Why get people to recoil? Why not get them to engage, not recoil away, but to engage society? How do we do that? Well, we have to, you can't put people into a corner for every bad thing they've ever done. I got an idea. Why not commend people for the good that they do on a daily basis that goes unnoticed? I mean, there's more of that going on than there is of the bad, believe it or not. We focus on the bad. The news focuses on it, the media, everything in the media. But how often do we focus on good? The good that we do really doesn't sell. It doesn't have that, that sellable quality. Sex, drugs, and fires and car wrecks and stuff like that in the media. That cut off head cells, and look at the shame associated with it, right? It frustrates me to no end. So if I was to nail it all down, bring it all together into one compact, assessment. I would say that we have taught ourselves through the information age to rely on the economy of shame rather than looking at other possibilities. And we haven't explored that enough. And I've challenged, people, and I've said, you say smart, what, how can we operate from a different paradigm, create a paradigm shift to get people to really start looking at some of the good things that they offer and really focusing on that rather than, what they've done wrong or something that displeases them. I mean, when you look at the economy, I mean, everyone is recoiling. They're curling up into a ball, financially. They're scared. Everything is fear-based. Everything is, I don't think there's I don't know in terms of resources. I mean, I know the banks have fucked everything up. They've fucked up everything in the world at this point when it comes to the monetary system that we operate from. But in terms of creating, I think it would be generational. I think it would take like three generations. But eventually, we have to start now, moving in the direction of that, a different way of thinking economically and on every level that there is, But we have to get away from shame. Shame has to be, if you can eliminate the shame, the power that institutionalizes it crumbles. And so we have to somehow find a way to not allow the shame to be what drives us, but rather our, our personal sense of right or wrong, I suppose. It's really going to come down to self-governing. You don't violate anyone's rights and choices because that leads to shame. You don't present yourself as a danger to self and others. That's a given. I mean, that's the whole law right there. And then you just take responsibility for your life and actions. I mean, if you can govern yourself on that, I mean, I don't think you need to fear judgment on anything, and you don't need to fear shame on anything. I mean, where I pointed that out, I hope the connections, you almost have to implant it subliminally. Just so that they run with it at a deferred date. Eventually the words will come back when they need it. And they'll say, he said this. Maybe I should reconsider this. Maybe that's a good idea. You have to be kind of subliminal in some ways, I suppose. And I've done that in real life, just in my own personal relationships. So I've done that. Just power of suggestion.
This is good.
Mountains.
I'm gonna have to run very shortly.